cotton is a really unique crop in that it brings with it a lot of innate heat and drought tolerance traits that we don't always have in a lot of our other more traditional crops, or certainly in other broadleaf species. So cotton for Kansas gives us a phenomenal opportunity to diversify our rotations away from feed grains. I said that we're dominated by wheat, corn, and grain sorghum. It gives us a good broadleaf crop to diversify our rotations. It also diversifies us economically.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boost your yields with KWS Hybrid Rye featuring Pollen Plus technology. Learn more at kws.com.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show by Wisenetics. I'm your host, Leo Bastos, Assistant Professor in Integrative Precision Agriculture at the University of Georgia. Today, we welcome our guest, Dr. Logan Simon. He is an Assistant Professor and Southwest Area Agronomist at Kansas State University. Logan, welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show. It's great to have you here with us today. And to get things started, can you tell us about a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are today?
Thank you for having me on, Leo. Yeah, so some background on myself. I grew up on a farm in West Central Illinois, kind of a mixed crop livestock operation there. And from there, I went to college and got my bachelor's in plant sciences at the University of Missouri. And then after I got my bachelor's completed, I didn't go directly into graduate school. I actually took some time and worked as a research specialist, is what we called it at the University of Missouri. It'd be like a technician position in crop physiology, actually, with Felix Fritchie at the University of Missouri. And there I was working on various projects and just kind of getting a better feel of what areas I really felt most interested in, most passionate about. And so in that position, I had the really cool opportunity to travel quite a bit to field locations in Missouri, Michigan, and then Nebraska, South Dakota, and Kansas. So that when I decided to go get my graduate studies, I pursued Kansas State University. So toured all those places and got the feel for them. And in the end, just kept moving west. And so headed to Kansas State University and really decided that if I was going to put the time into going and getting my graduate work, I wanted to be in a different environment. Cropping wise, a different production system. And so I actually made the leap past Manhattan and actually landed in Western Kansas. Got my master's and PhD working out of KSU's Agricultural Research Center in Hays, Kansas. And then after I completed my PhD in 2024, I had the fantastic opportunity to stay within the K-State system and moved about just a couple hours southwest of Hays, further down into southwest Kansas, in my current position at KSU's Southwest Research Extension Center in Garden City. So I keep telling people, I always tell people that I've just progressively been moving west. As the years go on, I just keep moving west, but I'm quite happy where I am. In Western Kansas, so and hope to be here for a good long while.
Fantastic, perfect. And I guess to follow up on that, could you tell us a little bit about some of the projects that you're currently working?
You bet. So I am a area agronomist with Kansas State University, based in the southwest portion of our state. In that way, I cover really all things crops and soils. For my region of Southwest Kansas, our production region is dominated by wheat, corn, and grain sorghum, but we also are the center of growth in cotton production. in southern Kansas. And so with my position, I've had the really fun opportunity to take on leadership for cotton agronomy for the state of Kansas. So a lot of my research has been focused on refining, or really in a lot of ways, developing recommendations for successful, both agronomically and economically successful cotton production recommendations and systems for southern Kansas. Everything from seed quality and planting recommendations through really excited to start a big fertility project here in 2025. Some other work, just some of our most basic practices around planting dates, seeding rates, variety selection, and things of that nature, all building this wealth for cotton.
That's fantastic. And so I think a good way for us to keep moving in the direction of cotton in Kansas is that, at least in the U.S., we see most of the highest cotton producing states being concentrated in the southern region, right? So we have Texas and Georgia, for example, as top producers. So what can you tell us a little bit about why is cotton becoming an option in Kansas, and perhaps why now? Why wasn't it an option in the past, and why is it now becoming more of an important option for a crop in a cropping system in Kansas?
Absolutely. My growers in Kansas will call us the northern frontier, or Arctic cotton is the phrase that some of my guys like to use, which I find absolutely hilarious. I do live about 6 hours north of Lubbock, Texas. We're about 6 hours north of Lubbock, Texas, which is the world's largest cotton patch. So in the grand scheme of things, we aren't that far away from the center of cotton production, but we are certainly pushing the boundaries this far north. And there's also an elevation effect out here on the high plains. And I'll talk about that at some point, maybe. But why cotton and why now? So cotton is a really unique crop in that it brings with it a lot of innate heat and drought tolerance traits that we don't always have in a lot of our other more traditional crops, or certainly in other broadleaf species. So cotton for Kansas gives us a phenomenal opportunity to diversify our rotations away from feed grains. I said that we're dominated by wheat, corn, and grain sorghum. It gives us a good broadleaf crop to diversify our rotations. It also diversifies us economically. So we're no longer operating in that solely feed grains realm. Especially as we move into southwestern Kansas, my southwestern growers are primarily irrigated, and we're irrigating out of the Ogallala Aquifer, which is a declining aquifer. So as our well capacities decline and our capacity to irrigate declines, there's a strong incentive for producers in the high plains to look to alternative crops that have greater adaptation to periods of drought and coupled with heat stress. And so cotton for my southwestern growers really is a great rotational partner with corn in those cropping systems. Whereas you move east in our state over into south central Kansas, We're primarily diversifying what historically was a region dominated by continuous wheat production. So cotton fits well as something to break up wheat on wheat on wheat.
Perfect. Now this is really interesting. And so I think you already talked about some of the benefits for Kansas farmers to perhaps adopt cotton to their rotation, right? And so specifically when it comes down so we talked about the diversification from the economical perspective, and perhaps the risk of growing a one crop or maybe other crops other than cotton. But from a management perspective, like a crop management perspective, what would be some of the benefits that perhaps growers in a region could have if they adopt cotton to their rotations?
Yeah, so in terms of management benefits, I mean, obviously the biggest thing is just strictly diversification away from a system that's dominated by feed grains. Diversification always brings benefits to a system, whether it be nutrient cycling, to really one of the biggest factors for our producers in South Central Kansas, it has been breaking up pest cycles. That's a huge benefit that cotton brings with it. It also brings much more diversified herbicide programs that we are able to incorporate into the system, taking advantage of those technologies to be able to get a better handle on some of our really problematic weed issues. Something that another really robust drought-tolerant crop, grain sorghum, which we are the largest producer of, does not bring with it. We don't have those same abilities to break up pest cycles. And so I think from a management perspective, that's huge. In our irrigated systems, the big thing there has been a lot of our producers in the irrigated corn world are basically splitting pivots. That's become a really popular strategy with cotton, has been, say, splitting a pivot or at least sharing a well. What I mean by that is with cotton, we truly can manage cotton for very limited water. We can be very strategic with when we're putting water out on cotton, irrigating at key physiological stages, namely pinhead square, matchhead square. And then the rest of the time, we're able to concentrate that water to corn. So it gives us the ability to be very, very strategic with our limited irrigation water and really benefits the whole system. It really benefits the whole system in that way so that we're still meeting the local demand for corn, but we're being more efficient with our overall water management. So that's been huge in the southwest portion of Kansas.
Perfect. Fantastic. So what I want to ask you next is perhaps looking at the flip side of that coin, right? So there are all these great benefits, but what are some of the challenges that a grower in Kansas can face when bringing cotton to their rotation? And I think you talk a little bit about some of them, but I guess if we take another look at that, so what do you think would be those major challenges?
Absolutely. So for that, I need to get just a little bit of history. So cotton production in Kansas really started developing into its current form back in the 90s. We have four local gins in the state of Kansas. Three of them are in counties that border Oklahoma, and one of them is one county north of the Oklahoma border. And so that's the first hurdle for cotton production, is having somewhere to take the crop. And so having four gins operating in the state of Kansas, we are beyond meeting our ginning needs. So we will meet our ginning needs for this cotton crop in Kansas for quite some time. We have nothing but room to grow. So we've met that. Cotton, things like planting and in-crop management, the equipment that we are currently using for corn or other row crops can be easily adapted to fit the needs of a cotton crop. The big hurdle, of course, is harvest. Harvest is huge. And that is what separates cotton from, say, like another alternative crop that has had its day in southern Kansas, winter canola. Canola can be harvested with the same equipment we harvest wheat. Our cotton is what we call stripper cotton. It has a tighter, the lint is tighter in the bowl. It doesn't kind of sit loosely out in the bowl. So it's not quite so conducive to picking. Either way, picker versus stripper, that's a very specialized piece of equipment that you're using one time a year. Over the years, we've seen the harvest technology kind of evolve. At one time, we had a lot more what we called the old basket strippers. We used to have a lot more basket strippers operating in Kansas. The industry as a whole has very much moved to stripper balers. And in the process of advancing our harvest technology, we have fewer strippers out there than we previously had. And so we have nothing but capacity for ginning, but our biggest hurdle is at the very end of the growing season and getting that crop harvested. I would say that can sometimes, most years, that can be one of our biggest challenges. Very few people are going to own their own strippers. Some of them do, but a lot of them are going to have it done custom harvest. And in that way, if it can be done fast, everybody's happy. But in those years where harvest gets delayed well into every year, there will be some cotton stripped in Kansas in January or February. And when those years happen, it certainly doesn't make somebody so excited for planting more cotton the next year.
Absolutely. And this is really interesting because, you know, so I, as you know, I used to live in Kansas and used to the Kansas weather, which Western Kansas, never lived in the Western part of it, but I would imagine that this would apply even to a great extent with just the way that precipitation comes down throughout the year, right? So the majority of our precipitation in Kansas is going to fall during the spring and summer months. With not as much precip coming down during the winter months, right? Which I think could help in that sense, because one of the main issues with cotton is that growers are getting paid not just by the yield, but also by the quality of the fiber. And one of the things that can impact that quality is how many days after you can already come and pick the cotton or harvest the cotton stays in the field and the fiber starts to get weathered by weather, right? Especially by rain, these like wetting and drying cycles. And so here in Georgia, we have pretty well distributed rainfall across the year, meaning that even in the winters, you get more precipitation than you would in other places like Kansas. And so for us here, leaving the crop out for that long, especially a cotton crop, could be very detrimental to fiber quality. I'm sure there's still some implications of that in Kansas, but perhaps to a lesser extent, right?
Right, exactly. So we definitely get away with it more than somebody would if we were further to the east in a higher rainfall environment or certainly an area that expected more winter precipitation. We definitely do see declining quality. I know, so just some examples from 2024. 2024 was a good year in Kansas. We were able to get the crop in on time, which is really key for us. We, as soon as conditions are ripe to get the crop in, if we don't catch the heat units on the beginning of the season, we have a lot of risk of running out of heat units at the end. So getting the crop in early means we can get it out faster, or get it out at all. And so that was good this year. We had planting across the state was pretty good, surprisingly good actually. I did some assessments down in South Central Kansas, looking at just some work around stand density and uniformity. And my colleague, Rex Friesen, with Southern Kansas Cotton Growers in Winfield, Kansas, he and I were out walking fields and saying to each other, we have never seen stands this uniform. So wild year, not normal for us. So really good stands, good year overall. We did end up getting drier towards the end of the season. But honestly, as much as that can take off some top end yield potential in cotton, it also sets us up for a better harvest. And so South Central Kansas was over halfway done stripping cotton by November 1st, which is crazy. We were well ahead. That was phenomenal. Grades were coming in really well. Anything that was stripped before November came in great. We had 6 inches of rainfall in like 2 days in November across large portions of our cotton producing areas in southern Kansas. And color grade hit us hard. We had a lot of color grade issues in the cotton crop that was harvested after that. So certainly something that we can face issues with. So it's always something, and every year is different. This year was color that caught us, but some years in our thermally limited environment, sometimes it's micronair, sometimes it's this year was color.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, 6 inches in November in Kansas, that's tough. Yeah.
It balances out all of the years of zero. We have to reach our 30-year average somehow. Right. And when 9 years out of 10, it's zero, you got to have a 6-inch year, I suppose.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, I think you talked on so many great points here. And one that I just want to delve a little bit deeper here is one of the challenges perhaps being related to temperature. And maybe both ends of it, but I'm thinking more about the temperature as you were talking about earlier, related to growing degree days and really getting that crop to the finish line when it comes to that. But perhaps, I'm sure that you may also have challenges on the other side of the temperature spectrum as far as having some very, very some stress coming from very hot days as well. So I guess, perhaps thinking more about just fitting cotton growing season within the growing degree days that you have available at the region, but also how does temperature changes that, but also these peaks, these moments of high temperature across the growing season, and perhaps, if there is a way to that you guys are working to manage that as well.
I get flack still calling us thermally limited for cotton. Some people, we've been successful with it for so many years now that some people would call us maybe not as thermally limited as we once thought. But cotton does behave differently up here, and we have less flexibility. One of the points that I had mentioned is that getting cotton in early is absolutely essential because we need all the heat units at the beginning of the season that we can get, just in case we don't have as many heat units at the end of the growing season. We need enough heat units to get that crop to maturity so that we are able to get those bolls matured and have a harvestable crop. But you also mentioned the heat events, and we certainly have that. Kansas, I tell you, we have the both extremes. Just in this last year, where I'm based at Garden City, we have gone from highs in the summer of 112 to a low of minus, I think it might have been minus 18, something like that.
And this is all Fahrenheit, right? Just to clarify to the audience.
In Fahrenheit, yes. In Fahrenheit. Thank goodness not in Celsius. In Fahrenheit. And so it's absolutely insane. So interestingly, cotton has just such better stress tolerance to heat than some of our other species that are out there, and just the ability to recover from heat stress. So one of the benefits, flowering in the canopy is a big benefit that we get with cotton. We have the flowers developing there in the canopy with active transpiration occurring, cooling the canopy, helping those developing bolls during those periods of high stress. But the other thing is that it's quite indeterminate. Cotton has a very indeterminate crop. If we do shed squares or bowls, and we do, we are typically able to produce more later at later positions on the plant that are able to compensate for that stress. Interesting work has been done on this subject, and it's really, really neat. The work has been done out of Garden City, but also our colleagues in Bushland, Texas, and the Texas Panhandle, also not necessarily a region of traditional cotton production. We're even they are pushing it quite quite a ways north, not quite as far north as us, but the work that's been done there has been really intriguing because it's showing that for the same we are reaching key growth stages on fewer heat units than the traditional the traditional models would suggest cotton should hold to. And I think there are a number of reasons why that's happening. One thing is that at our higher latitude, our day length is longer through the summer. We have more hours of daylight, and we're getting more solar radiation. And so I think that having more solar radiation reaching that crop up here, although we are not accumulating the same number of heat units as a more traditional region like Lubbock, we're still reaching those stages with fewer heat units. So that's been really, really intriguing. We have twofold things happening up here in our area. We have a high latitude, relatively speaking, for the cotton belt. We're quite a ways north for cotton production. But as you move west across our region, you also gain elevation. The core of our cotton producing area in Kansas is at a pretty low elevation around the Arkansas or Arkansas River, around mostly south of the city of Wichita in south central Kansas. As you move west, you gain elevation as you approach the Rocky Mountains. And in fact, in some portions of southwest Kansas, we've got cotton production at regions approaching 4,000 feet of elevation. And it's almost gotten kind of interesting talking about making a big deal about Kansas cotton when, as of 2024, we've also picked up two cotton producers in southeast Colorado. And that you want to really talk about elevation with some of that cotton produced at 48,000 feet, which is just really, really incredible. But we are pushing these new varieties to mature with fewer heat units, and we are making it work in our systems.
That's fantastic. So something I was wondering here while you were explaining is, what type of varieties are you guys using? Is it like how, because I would admit, I mean, I don't know if there are varieties being developed for these regions specifically, or are you using varieties that are more adapted to the southern states and perhaps are even not the best variety fits for your environment? So could you tell a little bit about that variety selection and options that you have in Kansas?
As of today, our cotton varieties are almost exclusively coming from Phytogen, and there is a reason. Our cotton must have resistance to 2,4-D herbicide. If we do not have that trait, the risk for 2,4-D damage in cotton is just far too severe. And so any variety that does not have 2,4-D resistance, the risk we're taking in that crop is just very, very high. A big part of it being just the amount of wheat stubble that gets sprayed with glyphosate and 2,4-D out here. It doesn't need to be that close to a cotton crop in order to cause some potential damage. And so that is absolutely essential. So we're basically all Phytogen at this point. And then within that, we've got some kind of really key, very short season. We actually refer to them as determinant cotton varieties, which is not something that would be desirable across most of the belt, but is something that is desirable at this latitude. So Phytogen 205 is our gold standard short season variety. We also have some production of Phytogen 210, but 205 is the dominant one. It is truly a very short season, very determinant crop. And so really, especially for a new grower just getting into cotton, 205 is a good starting point. Some other ones that are really popular, though, across our region is you'd be surprised. We don't have to plant exclusively the shortest season cotton out there. There is quite a bit of production of what I would consider a more medium type variety in Phytogen 411 and 415. And even those are also quite popular. They're a little bit more of a medium type, and they're a little bit more indeterminate. And what that means is that we're actually able to take advantage more of the indeterminate growth habit that we think of with traditional cotton, and something that 205, 210, we really feel that we give up some of that indeterminacy with those. So our producers have some options, but right now the key thing is having that early, maybe into medium, especially for an experienced grower, and then gotta have 2,4-D resistance. Gotta have 2,4-D resistance. The risk is just very high if we do not.
Fantastic. This is really interesting to learn this from you, as far as, you know, that there is a variety development program or programs that really target these conditions that you have. That's really great.
It's time for our famous three.
WiseNetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access WiseNetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
All right, so we are getting towards the end of our episode. And with that, I just want to say that thanks for listening. If you've made it through our episode to this point, I invite you to make sure to drop us a like, follow us, share this episode with anyone you think may benefit from this great conversation with Logan. All right, Logan. So now I have three questions for you that we ask every guest. The first one of them is, do you have any resource on the technical side, so more related to crops and soils, perhaps specifically to cotton, that you could share with our audience?
Absolutely. So I would say for people who are really interested in cotton and want to have access to a wealth of resources, I'm going to go ahead and plug the Cotton Specialist Corner podcast, which is a cotton-focused podcast that comes from the Extension Cotton Specialist working group of us working across the belt. It used to be led by Dr. Steve Brown at Auburn University until he retired, and is now being led by Dr. Camp Hand from the University of Georgia in Tifton. And he is our host for that podcast, but brings on and incorporates everybody from across the belt for the most relevant cotton information for folks all over. So highly recommend checking that one out.
Fantastic. Thanks for sharing that. All right. Our second question here of the last three is similar as far as asking if you have a resource to share, however, outside of the technical side. So do you have anything more, perhaps, I guess, non-technical that you would have as a resource that you could share with us?
Honestly, when I think of things that have been like non-technical that have really been impactful for me, they're less document type things. They're more people. You know what I mean? It's more like I I have people that I think of as these are my guides. These are my models, and I use them as helpful guides. So I struggle to think of a key non-technical resource, but I really think you gotta find those people that are out there. There's that just set really great examples for us. I know that I have several of them. One is my master's and PhD advisor. I was really fortunate. I had a phenomenal advisor, and today a fantastic colleague that I'm blessed to still be working with. But you got to find those people. There's plenty of them out there.
That's fantastic. And I just want to tell you, I think this is perhaps the first time I hear that, but it's really awesome because I think that really people, as you said, can be a really, really great resource. Of course, it's not something you can recommend, right? You're not going to say, hey, everyone, here's the email of my previous advisor. Reach out to them.
right.
So it's not like a recommendation, but I think it's a really nice, you know, acknowledgement of like people have impacts in our lives just as much as other known human resources.
Absolutely. And they don't need to be your advisor. Sometimes your advisor is a really great technical resource, but in terms of other things, maybe they have a style that's not quite yours. And in that case, I think finding other people that are out there. I can think of in our department plenty of other people. I can think of great examples outside in other institutions that are phenomenal resources as well, just to and just great role models. You know, I think that is huge. We stand on the shoulders of giants, I tell you. And so I think the more you recognize that and look to their examples, the further we get to go. We're really blessed that we get to go as far as we have because of the examples and foundations that have been set by others.
Absolutely. Oh, that's fantastic. And I think that's a great segue for our next question, right? So perhaps not as much as like the resource itself, but especially, you know, since you said a great resource is to have those mentors and those people that provide examples and help you, you know, with their experience and also knowledge, what would be skills that perhaps you identified in those people, but maybe others as well, of successful professionals in your area of expertise? Like, what are these skill sets that really perhaps make a person to become a role model to others coming after, or perhaps that just successful overall?
Be the helper. Be that person. It's worth your time. We are all busy. We are all overwhelmed. We all have a lot to do and a lot of expectations placed upon us. But when you see a need out there, do what you can. It will very much be worth your time. Invest in people. Invest in people. When you invest in people, your return is exponential. And so recognize the skills and recognize the potential in people and help them to capitalize on it. In a leadership position, that's the best thing that you can do. And as a professional, I think that is the best thing that you can do, is develop people and be that support, because it will be returned to you many, many fold.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. Awesome. Well, Logan, thank you so much for sharing all these great thoughts. I learned so much with you today, you know, especially related to growing cotton in an environment that, you know, has its challenges, has its its benefits as well compared to other places where we see cotton more often. So I really learned a lot with you. Thanks for sharing all that. And thanks for sharing your thoughts as well here on the last three questions. It was really great to hear from you today and really appreciated having you as a guest today.
Thank you for having me on, Leo. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.